RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
And now, it's the Better with Bourbon podcast with Brad Martineau and Deacon Palmer. Fast thinking and smooth drinking.
The views and opinions shared on the Better with Bourbon podcast are our own and those of our guests. Nothing we discuss should be taken as financial, legal, business, or gambling advice. Don't make investment, business, or betting decisions based on our conversations, as you should always talk to a qualified professional. Always drink responsibly, never drink and drive, and only consume alcohol if you are of legal drinking age.
So, the flight was pretty good.
Yeah.
But... you know, fucking, we can talk about it later. Hey, Mitchells, it's Better with Bourbon podcast, episode 6. It's February 25th, and we are in the Better with Bourbon studios here in Indiana, Pennsylvania.
We're back in the state.
Back in the state of Pennsylvania. We both traveled a little bit, so we're just going to kind of kick it. How was your travels? Where'd you go? What'd you do?
Well, I went to visit dear friends out in Palm Springs. They've been asking us to visit them out there, so Tony and I went out there, and I did not golf like you, but she did, and she shot an 86 with the borrowed set of clubs, one of her first rounds this year in California, so I got to give props to my wife, and that's why she's the reigning, you know, Indiana Country Club women's champion.
Well, for how many years, right?
Best greens.
Best greens in the world. Yeah, best greens in the world. Yeah, where did you play? Who'd you visit?
Well, the Donleys, Mike and Linda, visited them. They live right on the one course in the Westin, beautiful track. I got to walk it with Linda the one day, talk to all the old folks there and pet the dogs. It was awesome. Eat some fruit off the trees, get some dirty looks from them.
You know, of course. So. He said, he actually called me while we were on the golf course yesterday. And I said, hey, I'm going to have to call you back. And I called him today while I was driving back. We have a stock that we go back and forth on for many, many years. I told him a couple of years ago, it was a gold stock. You got to pick this up. You got to take a look at it. And he's actually followed the advice and calls with questions every now and again, which I appreciate very much. It's great, Mike. But he said the weather today, he's like, it was about 90 today. Mm. Right. Yeah. I know you,
but
you guys
too hot.
Yeah. But you guys got great weather, right?
We did. We hit it just in stride. I think it was like 65 the first day, and then it went up to 75, 80. So it was right in the mid 70s. It was, and you're walking around in that, and the sun, I mean, it was pure blue skies, snow capped mountains for the first time this year, I guess. And side, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Cali. I mean, it's fun to make fun of California when you're in Pennsylvania, but then you get to California and you realize it's fucking California. I mean, nobody's writing songs about Pennsylvania. They're like a million great songs
a little
about
more
California.
Expensive.
Oh, well, that's the truth. I mean, and if we had, I don't even know if I should do it, but I'm going to do it anyway. We spent a lot of time on the golf courses, down where I was,
and who were you with?
Okay. So we went down, Bobby Marcus, Ricky, and Barry McKnight. Awesome. Bob arranged, he's a member of this, I guess, vacation club called Inspirato.
Yeah, the American Express, like,
Dream something like this. Yeah, he arranged, and talk about a super generous buddy. He arranged the house and just said, I got the house, you guys get down, you know, but he took care of the house, which was beautiful. It's a house that has like four master suites. The bathrooms are all beautiful. Giant party area up top. Main living area is up top, third floor, so you can look down onto. We were in the Palmetto Dunes area of
beautiful area.
Yeah, of South Carolina, which is just gorgeous. And
I heard you guys all shared one bedroom, though. Is that
definitely not?
No?
Ricky suggested it, but I'm like, no. I'm going to go back to my own room.
Right?
Yeah, right. But we're reason I brought up California, looking up at the sky, is when we were out in the golf course and Ricky is looking up at the skies all the time. I'm like, what are you doing? Pay attention to what the hell you're doing. You're not hitting a ball well enough to be daydreaming. And he's like, no. See all these chemtrails. There's planes everywhere. Look, it's tic tac. He's going to hit me in the face next time he sees me if I keep doing it. But we spent a lot of time talking about chemtrails. And I got to be honest with you. And I said to him probably two, three, four times, I'm like, couple of years ago, this is exactly the thing that I would have said. I can't believe how ridiculous and that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You listen to him talk about it for 3 days, and it starts to make a lot of sense.
Well, and he's very well researched. This I know. Him and I have gone back and forth on a lot of things over the years, and Ricky does dig into it and doesn't stop. He's like a bulldog on a meat truck.
Definitely.
You know, so
he looks kind of like a bulldog, does, right?
But he's very well informed. Yeah,
I can edit that out if you want.
You're right.
No, leave it in there.
But he's very well informed.
We love you, Ricky.
You know, a lot of things that he's talked about over the years have kind of come true. Not kind of come true, but are coming true. So, you know, when he used to talk about Pizzagate 5 years ago, everybody kind of looked at him like he had three heads. So, just those big bulbous bald heads. I'm talking the weird looking ones that people stare at, you know. So,
But, you know, the prospect of playing winter golf, no matter how lovely it is where you go, we had sun all days, but we teed off day two and day. Okay, so we played the Arthur Hills course day one. We played Fazio day two. We played RTJ day three. I've played that Arthur Hills course, I think, twice before, and it's great. But I had never played the RTJ course, and man, was that nice. That was really beautiful. But we didn't go over to Kiowa. We kept it to those three.
That makes sense. It's right there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you, that neighborhood, there's great food. We had beautiful food, shrimp and grits for dinner, and eating that Low Country. I had collard greens. I mean,
I was really doing it.
And what was great too is, you know, those guys, they would have drinks at night. I drank all day, woke up, had beer. I had second beer, had beer on the golf course, but we would get Jack Daniels in the golf cart. We'd have beer afterward. We'd get wine. We'd go have this beautiful sleep like a baby. And we were doing hot tub outside in that cold weather, which I love. I had the tassel cap on, but in the 104 degrees. Yep. Beautiful. But winter golf is not satisfying. It's like you're playing with somebody else's hands. Mm. You know, and you can I could convince myself, you know, day two, day three to get the long club.
You're still talking about golf, right?
I was going to say.
Just want to make sure that I'm following the story here.
Right. We are explicit.
Yeah. What was the ironic part of being the youngest guy in this group, yet having this most beautiful silver head of hair of the four?
It's one of the group forgot his hat at the restaurant night one, and we called back and. I said, is this the lovely gal that helped your favorite group of the night? I think we spoke to you when we came in. She goes, oh, yes, I think so. I said, well, yeah, I was the really ravishingly good-looking guy with the silver hair there with three very distinguished yet significantly older gentlemen. Do you remember us? And she's like, I know exactly who you're talking about. Yeah, anyway, we had a great time. And since we're talking about it, I just want to say, hey, thank you, Bobby Marcus, for your generosity. That was a great trip. Really appreciate it, buddy.
No, that's Bob Turkey.
Yeah, totally. So on the way back.
What'd you pick up?
Yeah, right. So I'm sitting in the Savannah airport today, looking at the market, catching up on emails and messages. And I'm kind of wandering around looking at stuff without looking at it. And I realized they have this little bourbon shop. And I think maybe they sold maybe another spirit or two. Maybe there was a gin or something they were selling. But it's all whiskey from Georgia and South Carolina. And, you know, I'm like, oh, I walk in and I say to the lady, I said, hello, this is a really interesting shop you got. I do a podcast on bourbon and we're filming it tonight. If I were going to take a bottle, what's the one I want? And she said, we got a couple of good ones, but this is the one that gets typically the best review. This is called Savannah Single Barrel Founders Reserve. This is a straight bourbon whiskey. But it's kind of funny. It says straight bourbon whiskey handcrafted in Georgia, which causes a little cognitive dissonance for me, but we're not going to split hairs. 54%, 108, aged, 5 years.
Yep.
And the bottle's nice. I don't know the first damn thing about it. Didn't have an opportunity to look it up.
Yeah, I don't either. This is a last.
Let's see. What do we think?
But hold on. I've been sipping on it.
Oh, I haven't had a sip.
Yeah, it gets props for the bottle.
Yeah, bottle's pretty cool. Smooth.
Well, the nose, I get a little water in there now. Smells nice. No real boozy scent on the.
No, it's got a good taste. I can see why it's one of their better sellers.
Did you say bougie?
Boozy.
Yeah.
What we call that? Oh, well.
What would you call it?
Harry, you would say this has a little bit of a rye, a little rye spice to it. But it has an interesting...
I'll try it in a minute.
Like, after that goes away, it's got...
Does it have a little bit of a dirty stocking taste to you?
It might.
Yeah.
But depending on the time of night.
There's an interesting sweetness about a second after you swallow it that tastes a little vanilla-y.
Huh?
Do you get that, or am I making that up?
Kind of like hanging around you.
Here, hold on. Let me...
So... I had no chance to study this. I have nothing to offer other than it tastes really good.
Yeah, I got nothing.
This was a last minute. It was great. I mean, we had a different bottle ready to go today, and we
no fire. No fire in this.
No, there's no fire. For being 100 and was it 100? You say 108? Yeah, I mean it's.
So props to the lady at the Savannah Airport.
Yeah, very good.
You know, I think for bourbon from a state that's not supposed to be making bourbon, that's a pretty good bottle.
Did you charge you a Mason-Dixon tax for that? Or?
No, I slipped into after hanging out with Ricky for a couple of days. I slowed down a little bit instead of talking so fast.
Yeah.
And now tell me about your bourbon there, dear. And I think she gave me a $2-3.
Gave her the lazy eye.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, this thing. I'm not sure that was the most professional review we've ever done or will ever do, but it's better than some we've done. This is not a bad bottle.
That's as good as it gets with this Better with Bourbon crew.
Yeah, so I can't remember what the name of the store is, but you're in the Savannah Airport.
The deal with the show is you drink bourbon while you talk about tech and other things, not that you're, you know, bourbon.
Well, we hope
I think we've proven that over.
We hope that after maybe
we're consumers.
Maybe after 50 or 100 episodes, we'll be better at reviewing than we will be at drinking. But right now, we are expert drinkers.
Like I said last week, I want
decent reviewers.
I want to taste a bourbon one time and say, yeah, forest floor.
Yeah.
I heard somebody say it once.
Why not?
It sounded like the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So, yeah, forest floor.
The true test will be the bourbonometer and see how low it is by the end of the show. If it's down toward that bottom label, then that's a good bourbon.
Well, and our audience will also know how many takes we have to do after traveling all day, both of us. So we'll see how good we really are.
We have an interesting agenda tonight. Because we were both traveling and because a lot of the big events that have happened in the world over the last few days have been so well covered, we're just going to hop around a little bit. We're going to do, we got to talk a little bit about the hockey game. Okay. I know everybody else in the world's talking about it, we followed the Olympics pretty religiously. We got a little bit of an update on the medal count. Well, actually, we should just do that right now. Shit.
I think we should.
Yeah, so U.S., if I'm getting this right, it's the highest medal total we've ever accumulated and the highest gold total. I think it was at 12?
Exactly.
Yeah, it was 12. And we finished second only to Norway,
right,
who had the most golds any country has ever won.
Well, can I just say that with an asterisk? And not to take
in anything. The winter.
I'm not trying to take anything against Norway, but... They had one guy that was like a standout cross country skier. He won 6 out of 6 of his events in cross country skiing. I mean, that's how they travel there. I mean, this guy just, you know, they get around from the post office to the store. You know, he just kept going. I mean, he hasn't even stopped. He never even stopped and got his gold medals.
Didn't you call it? I think 2 episodes ago that we won't beat Norway. In the medal count, I'm pretty sure you did.
Did I say that?
Yeah, you did.
I'm pretty sure you did. It just sounds like something I would say.
No, you called it. Yeah,
this would become a short clip. I'm sure.
No, you called it. But I guess my point is, and again, that which is fantastic, and that was a record in itself, winning 6 gold medals and sweeping every event that he was in, which is remarkable. But you take out the cross country skiing, we're right there with Norway.
You got that right, and I want to say something about these cross country skiing events. Look, how many? Did he? He won 6.
Mm-hmm.
All cross country skiing. Some of them with the shooting. Also, like
some.
Do we need that many different cross country?
I think one of them. He had to wave and like kiss the girls.
Right.
Like,
Maybe we're unsophisticated Americans.
Probably.
I don't know. Maybe I've been drinking too much.
We're into that curling game.
I don't. Yeah. Right. I don't see how there can be 6 different types of cross-country skiing. Now, the one with the gun is interesting, and I have a question about that. I don't understand, like, why do we not have, given the United States military prowess and the pride we take in it, why do we not dominate that event? We should be taking Norway.
Is there an event where you shoot with cross country skis? Or?
Oh yeah, there's like two of them.
Be more like Matt Damon in your own, like, you know, going down the side slums fast. I'm talking speed skiing and then try to shoot. That makes it a little more interesting, you know.
More of a challenge. Have you ever tried shooting if you're winded and you're breathing heavy? Try it sometime. It's hard enough when you're not.
Have you ever cross country skied?
No. I've done a lot of skiing.
Yeah.
Never cross country, and I've done a fair amount of shooting, but never while running.
These aren't Navy SEALs out there doing this either. These are athletes.
Yeah.
That the shooting it becomes part of the sport. They're not really.
Listen, I would love to see you. See, I would love it. If we get some special forces guy who works in the.
You know. This is a Jordan Paul topic. This is 100% Jordan Paul.
Well, that's a guarantee. I did try cross country skiing in Wisconsin because that was a popular sport on the golf courses during the wintertime. And it's not as easy as it looks.
Oh, it doesn't look easy at all.
But you're shuffling, it feels like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And
that one where
there's a rhythm to it, you know?
That one where they're going around, it's almost like a motocross track where they got to go uphill and they got to stop and take the skids off the bottom of the thing and tuck them in their bib. But if any of it's hanging out, you get penalized, and then you put them back on. I'm like, maybe that's big in Norway, Sweden, Denmark. It's not interesting.
It's not interesting.
It's not interesting at all.
It definitely is not interesting. It's not very, and I hate to take away from the folks that do it because it's an endurance sport for sure.
Yeah, of course.
But
impressive. I just don't want to watch
really
it.
It's really a skill sport, though.
I mean,
that's where I kind of come into, you know, like everything else, there's a skill to it, the balance, the athleticism, the quickness, you know. And trust me, I get that you have to do balance and athleticism and quickness in cross country, but there's not any special flair to it, I guess, is what I'm saying. And I did not watch one cross country episode.
I watched one or two for a few minutes, and you just, you know. I wanted to make this observation. Whatever happened to the days when Italy, France, Germany would – win medals left and right in the Winter Olympics? Russia, right. When did all of a sudden it become basically Norway, us, and Denmark? I mean, and it's interesting to see the some of the competition the Asian countries are producing.
I think part of it probably has to do with, you know, back in the 20, 30 years ago, professional athletes weren't allowed to compete from the United States, but all those other countries' athletes were all professionals. Just going back to the Miracle on Ice,
that's true.
Hockey thing. Those were a bunch of college kids that had never played in the pros, against professional
players.
Which,
Perry, is a great segue to talk about hockey because, I mean, 46 years later, here we are.
46 years to the day. That's a remarkable stat. That's neat.
I did not realize we hadn't won a gold in hockey since then.
We've won three. 80.
Fun fact, the Miracle on Ice game when they beat the Russians wasn't the medal game.
You know, no,
they had to beat Norway, I think, or Sweden after that.
I think it was Sweden.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. Here's another fun fact. I got this from another podcast today, so I got to. Did you know that what was the coach? Miracle on Ice.
Herb Brooks
was the last man cut from the 1960 gold medal team. And I didn't know that. And I don't know whether they made whether that was a part of the movie. If it was, I had forgotten that detail. But what a spectacular detail. He was the last guy didn't make it. He ends up the coach in 1980, and it's, you know, the greatest sports moment of all time. I'm really happy for Mike Sullivan because he he was part of the fabric here in Pittsburgh.
Another fun fact, the last two coaches that have coached a gold medal winning Olympic hockey team both coached for the Penguins as well.
Yeah. That's a great stat.
Right.
I wouldn't have
known. Herb Brooks coached.
I didn't know. Did he?
Yeah. Yeah, back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
So
yeah.
Sidney getting hurt, do you think that had an effect, especially I envision him being in the 3-on-3?
I think it made a big difference when the game mattered. Because, you know, that's what I was most afraid of. You have him out there and in the middle, and they move McDavid to the wing.
Right.
And just let those – I mean –
Yeah. But with that being said, we were still underdogs and we still persevered. And our goalie, our goalie, dude, you know, he just got the Medal of Freedom last night.
That was awesome.
He's been marked as the new Secretary of Defense. 41 out of 42 stops. I mean, that is amazing.
A hot
gold medal game.
A hot goalie can change a game, change a series. They really were not the better team. I mean, Canada on paper. is the better team.
Well, who sniped?
But,
somebody sniped.
But we still won.
McKinnon? Didn't McKinnon say something off color after the fact?
Yeah. No. It was McKinnon. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay.
He made a call. He goes, "Well, you all saw who the better team was out there." So hey, just because they were
scoreboard motherfucker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Hey, that's all we say to Latrobe. I mean, I don't know what you.
It's very un-Canadian. Like we talked about
the silver medal manners. Is nice and the silver is going up.
We talked the Canadian manners last week with Jordan about the curling.
Right.
They have not handled this well. Neither did John Cooper, the coach. Yeah, he was being kind of a dick about it too.
Yeah, you know, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, I thought was that's a neat thing to
is it just Trump rubbing Canada's face in the mud right now? Or
I don't think so. I mean, okay, so if Herb Brooks
51st state,
Herb Brooks, and Ruzioni created maybe the greatest sports moment in American history, possibly. Mm. How can you not acknowledge this with some sort of, I mean, I thought it was great.
Look, I think everything he did, he deserved it. I think he got, I don't know if there's an MVP award, but I mean, if there was, you know, between him and Jack, I mean, obviously.
No, give it to him. I mean,
they both were just, came through in clutch.
Yeah.
Came through in the clutch.
That picture of Hughes with the flag wrapped around him, missing all his teeth.
Missing the teeth because he just took a high stick.
And that's a serious.
Still bleeding. That's hockey right there.
And do you know his mom was in the 1990 Olympics?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
What she
did? I think his sister plays.
1992 Olympics?
Yeah.
It was a 92 Olympics she played in. So
it's like the Watt family.
Yeah. So, I mean, she's he's coming from talent. And now you can obviously see where, you know, and obviously his, I think Quinn is also on the team. So, I mean, you know?
Yeah, the Hughes boy, I mean, that's really something. I wanted to share this. I think this is right. I'm going to have to check myself after I say this. So no hate mail if this is wrong. Presidential Medal of Freedom is the highest honor that a civilian can receive in the United States. I have both an aunt and an uncle who received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Arnold got it from Obama. Went to see that. It was awesome.
It
was very cool to be in the rotunda for
that. Did you get to touch it?
No. In fact, they wouldn't let me anywhere near. I didn't even get a seat. I had to stand like in the hall.
They're like, that one.
Did they have special security with you?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Everybody kept saying, "Deacon, why is that red dot in your forehead?"
You need to stay out in the foyer. Yeah, right.
And then my aunt Chi-Chi, my dad's big sister, Arnold's little sister, was the inspector general for the Army for the last, I don't know how many years of her career.
Wow.
And she was awarded Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Bush.
Amazing.
First. Wow. And is that right?
That's awesome.
I think that's right. Yeah.
That's amazing.
I remember seeing Arnold get that award. It was on the news.
That was big
news around here.
Yeah. I mean, that was huge. But being able to go and see that, the rotunda in the Capitol is like awe-inspiring. I mean, it's the art in there is outrageous. I mean,
I would love to see that.
Oh, it's crazy. Anyway.
I guess they're remodeling right now, right?
Oh, are they?
Well, the East Wing, I guess, right? New ballroom?
I don't know.
You don't know about the new ballroom?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody needs more ballroom.
You know what? I mean, but shouldn't America's home base have a party room? I mean, shouldn't it?
Actually, I think that's what most people agree that it's the right thing to do. It's just something to complain about.
I guess Trump condoed it off, though, and he's just going to lease it back to all the parties here going forward.
Sounds about right. Yeah, well, anyway, the Olympics, I don't know. Olympics were great. We're missing anything in the Olympics?
I don't think we are.
No.
I did want to ask you, because since I was out in Palm Springs, it kind of reminded me, and I thought I saw somewhere along the lines that Arnold used to travel out to Palm Springs.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of friends out there, right, back in the day?
Yeah, he had a house in Palm Desert.
That's what I was going to say.
Later in his life.
I was talking about
really liked it there,
Mike and I were kicking that around. I thought I heard that at some point, yeah.
I'd never been there, but I think somebody just bought that house, or it's for sale. I don't know what's going on. Anyway. But yeah, we have coming off this kind of USA moment.
Mm.
I'm really looking forward to the World Cup.
Me too.
You know,
and I think we have to acknowledge that the women's hockey team also won. So to have both,
thank you.
You know, both teams win, and our neighbors, you know, got family that's on the team. The second, the backup goalie. You know, John. You know, wow.
Oh, right.
You know,
yeah. Oh, John. Yeah,
you're right.
Brad's neighbor works for just very recently retired from a long illustrious career at the Federal Reserve. You know, kind of a note here about what's awesome about Indiana, PA. We out here in the middle of the forest, and we got a guy living next door who can help formulate monetary policy. This is a great, met this guy in the Rose Inn, which is our local dive bar here for you non-local folk.
That's where I met him too.
Yep. Is that right? And just started talking, came to find, he goes, oh, you're from DC. I've spent a bunch of my life in DC. Oh, no kidding. We go back and forth. Next thing you know, I'm like, what kind of work you do? He's like, I'm help Federal Reserve with, you know, I'm like, holy shit, John, what are you doing here at 2 o'clock in the afternoon drinking in the bar where the rest of us do nothings are hanging out? But I'll tell you, I've had some crazy conversations.
He was just being a interesting federal
neighborhood
employee.
You got here.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting neighborhood.
Yeah, totally. So, what do you think? Well, you need a refill.
I need a refill.
So
why don't we stoke the fire and
we'll
be back right after these.
Yeah, we got a little bit of what we can talk, a little business, a little AI.
Oh, there's a lot of topics right now.
Who knows what we're going to cover?
Nothing.
Cheers.
Cheers.
All right.
What happens when work disappears? When money dissolves, and when freedom becomes something you earn, not something you're born with, a new kind of power is rising, not a government, not a corporation, but the algorithm. In the algorithmic state, no jobs, no money, little freedom, Amazon best-selling author Bradley J. Martineau reveals the world we're stepping into, a world where your reputation is computed, your opportunities are filtered, and your identity is shaped by systems that know you better than you know yourself. This is not science fiction. This is the operating manual of the future forming around us right now. If you want to understand the forces that will define power, belonging, and freedom in the decades ahead, start here. The algorithmic state. No jobs, no money, little freedom. Available now on Amazon.
Welcome back, Mitchells. You can see that we have refilled.
We have refilled.
And that fire's looking great.
The fire's going up. The bourbon's going down. And we do have a special guest in the studio.
Yeah, tonight. Studio audience.
Yeah, we do. He is one of the original OG Mitches from the Mitch Corps.
Gentlemen, how you doing?
Johnny Mock is in the house.
It's Johnny Mock in the house.
Honor to be here with you guys.
No, it's
great to have you, bro.
Fantastic. The bourbon's good. The company's better.
Oh, and Johnny's one of the greatest bourbon connoisseurs I've known. Well, either that or bourbon drinkers I've ever known.
That's the conversation. A better bitter drinker than a connoisseur, right? We're working on the connoisseur part like you guys. Well,
audience should know, he sampled the whiskey. Says A, it's good.
Says it's great.
B, it sounds like our tasting notes were pretty right on.
I think so.
You say, John?
Hey, well, yep. We're going back for seconds, so that's a good sign.
And I got something I want to say. You can't see Johnny, but he's wearing a Penn State hat, and it makes me want to say thank you, Pennsylvania, for taking such good care of us.
Pennsylvania does take care of us.
Got to get the PA shout out in.
That's right. So we're gonna be doing. You know, last week we broke a little bit of ground. We had both our first. 2 weeks ago we had a call in, and then we had a studio guest. So we're going to try to expand upon this. The studio guest adds a little flair and pizzazz to the action. So there might be more voices in here in the coming weeks.
Yeah, we're working on a few different things.
Yeah. Some friends will be around. We're not going to let them speak for very good reasons. No, Johnny's in a different camp.
They will be in the ball gig and tied up in the corner.
Yeah, and you know who you are. You know who you are. Right? And then the call-ins. We thought the call-in was really fun. Perry loves Jordan, wants to bring him on the show all the time. Jordan, I have to work with Jordan's agent now to figure out where we get time for him to come back on and what we have to pay him, because he's going to have a podcasting career without having any stake in a podcast at all.
We were just the first stop of all the sports stations he was talking to. He was awesome.
Yeah, so JP, thanks. Your contribution was noted. We could be back in touch, dog.
When we were talking about that, well, that's going to be noisy on there. When we were talking about that whole double touch incident with the Americans and with the Canadians and the Swedes or the Finnish team. I forget who they were. But
what'd you call them, the Finnish?
Finnish, yeah.
Yeah, that's appropriate. Yeah.
Whenever you said, so what's the deal with this double touch? What's the deal? And Jordan is so blunt, he goes, well, the Canadian cheated. Yeah, right. It was perfect.
One, you know, Jordan is great at making a point. excellent professional speaker, but he also knows me well enough. He knew exactly what I was going for and gave it to me there. Attaboy, Jay. Right. So we have some.
We do. And before we get into that, I think there's one thing we want to just let I'm sure the studio audience probably, and also the audience that's going to be out there, is going to notice we have a new prop in the house.
Oh, I love it.
It's the leg lamp. And many may think they've seen this on the Christmas Story, but we actually had Barry's drag bunny leg molded.
This is not a major award. This is actually Perry's leg.
No, that really is. So, you know, when we're talking about just touching to the finish, right, you know, right there.
It is fragile.
Yeah.
It is fragile.
It could be pretty tough to walk out of here with only one leg carrying all this equipment.
And I know in one of our promos this week, you know, we had to do a shout out to the Sphere in Vegas and the Wizard of Oz, because when I saw that big ruby slipper, there's only one other foot that would fit perfectly on.
Well, we talked about, did you
I
win
appreciate
in Vegas?
You thinking
did
of
you
me.
Play? Did Mrs. Martineau?
Mrs. Martineau played. She wasn't successful this time, which is unusual. Usually she's very
successful. Yeah, I was asking. I know she's a...
Yeah.
She doesn't go to have fun. She gets to make better. Money.
I stayed away from the tables, which I have a few folks saying, are you feeling okay? I'm like,
really?
I was feeling okay. I wasn't feeling up to gambling. So I just took in the scenery, and it was awesome. It was kind of like the tail end. I worked on some notes for today and finished up an article. And
as a great friend of ours says, work, 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 Bradley. Work.
It's not work when it's fun like this, is it?
Yeah, well, hold on. That same guy also says, finished. I'm not even close to finished. I'm just getting started. And he'll be in the. You know who you are out there.
Yeah, he does know who he is. He's right now. He's probably exactly where we think he is.
I know. Yeah, he does. He definitely is. We'll get him. We're gonna get him. Todd, we love you.
Yeah.
Okay. We get a little bit of. We've been dicking around now for how long? We get a little bit of actual business conversation. We need
25 minutes.
Yeah. Some. Yeah.
There's some serious AI business going on this week. Yeah. So let's get into it.
Okay. So we're gonna. Two things. OpenAI did something we're going to talk about, and then we talked a little bit about Anthropic, who's run by the guy Dario, who is raising the alarm. Anthropic had an interesting week, so we're going to talk about both of those. Do you care which one you want to do first?
Whatever you want to tackle first, I'm all aboard.
Okay, let's do the OpenAI. OpenAI this week announced, and I don't know whether we'd call it a deal, but a partnership with a bunch of management consulting firms that I think most of America would just say, who cares? Why is this important? I don't give a shit. I don't know. I've heard of these companies. I don't really know what they do. OpenAI struck a deal with four consulting firms. I think it's McKinsey and BCG, which are like the Mercedes-Benz and BMW of management consulting firms. Capgemini, which is like the Ford Pinto of consulting firms. Do a lot of federal work. And then who's the last one? It was...
there was one more.
What was the last one? It was... doesn't matter. Anyway, it was Accenture. Okay. It was your Budweiser, Old Faithful, right? And the deal was that these four management consultants would now align with OpenAI to help corporate customers not just experiment with AI, but move into... actually implementing agentic models that will allow for corporate intelligence to be automated and fully kind of AI enabled. So this is an important step in AI moving beyond this, well, let's just turn it on and play with it and see what happens. We're going to limit any damage anybody can do. You know, we're not going to have corporate data in there. They can use it to help write emails or respond to, you know, personal inquiries and just help save a few minutes here or there. That's now going to change in a very profound way because of some of these agentic advances that we've talked about recently. The idea that we can allow the AI to actually have access to our data, not just personally, but in this regard, kind of corporate financial data, client data, and help automate some of the analysis and some of the deep reasoning tasks that a management consultant would do, right? So the idea here is we're going to roll out actual projects and programs that will help companies make more money.
Now, by enlisting these four consulting firms, and I'm guessing that they're paying them to do so, in some form or fashion, whether it's
on
revenue basis share or upfront cost, as their duty to their clients, should they be disclosing that now? Are they actually looking, if they're pitching this as a salesperson, in my opinion, to their client, and acting as that head of sales, really, enterprise sales. Is there a conflict there? I think at least full disclosure needs to happen. And you have a great, you know, you come, and Deacon, as many know, may know or may not know, you come from that world. You worked at Gartner. So I think you probably have faced this dilemma before or know how the firms handle that.
Yeah, the economic model is pretty much this. There's not, in some models there will be a revenue split, but what this is really about is when a company would maybe get in touch with OpenAI and say, hey, how do we use your tools more effectively on the enterprise level? Because you have to pay for that enterprise access. OpenAI will say, hey, instead of you name a company, Novartis. You, Novartis, instead of fumbling around and dicking around and kind of getting in half right and kind of getting some pieces wrong and only doing the things you want to do, these four companies can come in and help you in ways that are unique to either your economic model or your industry vertical, because they have that experience. That's what a management consultant does. They come in and they help you with outsourced understanding about a particular industry, whether it be financial services or manufacturing distribution, even down into the middle market legal. And those folks would essentially bill that client organization for services associated with helping them do a handful of things to make AI work. It's not just, do we have a technology stack that supports AI in the way that is necessary? All these major, and if you're a Fortune 500 company or even down to a $2 billion middle market company, you have a technology stack that works. You have cyber and invested. Everything is integrated. You have a server stack that is secure. You have enterprise data. That's number two. You have to have a data environment that has data that's able to be analyzed, right? So that's been a big learning curve for a lot of organizations is your data has to be clean and interoperable. And some people out there will understand the term garbage in, garbage out. The better organized and structured your data is, the easier it'll be for an LLM to help you analyze it. But then the third is really where most big companies, not just relative to AI, but in all kind of technology adoption waves over the past, and we can talk about them if you want, it's not really a technology question. Most of the failure it's not that they can't make the technology work, it's that their operating model, the way they're structured, what they do every day isn't properly modified to kind of allow space for these new technical capabilities.
Which is hence where these four companies come in, because that's exactly what they do every day.
Operating model and to your governance, right?
Right.
Who in the organization is the appropriate person or kind of department? Who's the appropriate staff to do what with what data? Who do we not need to give data to? Where do we need to set up barriers?
I think you're going to like my 15-layer operational AI governance structure that I've formulated.
Yeah, see, this is exactly why people are like, why would we be talking about this? Because that's exactly what happens. A 15-layer AI governance structure to most organizations be like, hey, what is that and why do we need it? But it's essential. If you're a public company and you're on the board of a public company and you have fiduciary responsibility to not only your shareholders, but your board and your employees, there have to be set standards about how do we want to set limits around the use of the technology to make sure that it's not getting out of hand or exposing us to institutional risk that we're not prepared for. And that's total strike zone for you.
Well, and that's what's happened. And that's why we've seen some of the fail. And I don't even call them failures. They're learning experiences that have happened early on in the AI adoption, especially now since the agentic AI has come on strong and people have been eager to adopt it, but without knowing to put the AI governance structure in place first, thinking that this is just another tool they can add on.
Yeah. Well, so this kind of evolution where we have these new technology tools and they're so powerful that they necessitate a new operating model. Maybe we have to move people in different departments around. Maybe we have to have different support structures because certain people aren't going to be wasting time doing jobs that now the AI is going to. So how do we redeploy those people in ways that are more economically viable to help our customers and help us achieve our financial goals? That's essentially what we're talking about. This is not new. This has happened, in Web 1.0 when the internet was invented and we had to figure out, well, why would I put my business online? What advantage is there for me to that?
Then of course, risk.
Yeah, it's right. It's super high risk, right? And then, you know, you advance. Then we have the wave of mobile computing and you know, you work in environments like banking.
Right.
You know, when mobile started, banks were scared to death of it.
They were.
Because it was a massive security and cybersecurity.
They're
massive,
still scared to death of it.
Yeah, massive compliance risk, right?
Yeah.
But they realized we can't do business. This is what people want from us. They don't want to come into the branch. They want to do it on their PC or on their phone. So these waves of technology evolution are not new. I guess we should probably, the next one is cloud.
Yeah.
We move from Web 1.0 to mobile to cloud, and now AI is the natural kind of, step forward. So big companies know they have to do this. But the reason there are so many consulting companies that have to come in and help them is because I think to this point in history, if you're on a board of a Fortune 500 company, of which I've worked with several, I'm not speaking out of school here, or you run a middle market company that makes, you know, anywhere from...
Enron's no longer around, by the way.
Yeah, right. You make something from $100 million up to about $2 billion. That's $2 billion sounds massive, but we're calling that a middle market company. As an executive or a board member, you could choose to be kind of tech lingual or tech savvy or not. And, you know, I think that now that we're talking about agentic development and the change in the fundamental nature of the workforce and the fundamental nature of how we're using not just our own data, but our customers' data and the security requirements that are inherent in a move like that, board members and CEOs are no longer able to be technology adjacent. They're going to have to really engage with that CTO, chief technology officer, chief data officer, chief risk officer, chief legal. I mean,
you're running to the choir here.
Running a company is becoming way more complicated. And if you don't have that skill set, you're going to have to retire. Right.
And it's become absolutely critically necessary at this point. So, if you're a leader in any of these major corporations and companies, even privately held companies, if you want to be successful against your competitors in your industry, you have to know how to talk to the folks in your teams, different teams, whether it's your IT department, whether it's your risk department, whether it's your legal department, your business development department, because AI is playing a big role or can play a big role in all of those.
It has to play a big role because what we're seeing very clearly is in public companies, in the public markets, valuations for organizations who have moved beyond kind of that, well, we're kind of playing with, we're doing a pilot.
The experiment.
And then we're going to do another pilot and it's experimenting. Companies who are actually committing to this as a core kind of foundational tenet of how we run the business are commanding higher multiples.
They are.
And when you move down to, and this is really important, when you leave the Fortune 500, because how many people, you know, actually work for Fortune 500 companies? Hundreds and shazillions of shazillions of people work for companies between $100 million and $2 billion. And most people that work in corporate America do. Those companies are being valued by either public markets or private equity buyers really in a way that's very contingent upon their ability to make sense of an AI strategy, show actual wins that are economically viable. And typically that means wringing out cost out of your delivery model, whatever that is, whether you're a manufacturer again, or, you know, work in insurance or healthcare. And that is unfortunately kind of the first step in, to a degree, machines superseding humans' ability to do the jobs that they've had to this point. I'm not at a point yet where I'm willing to seed this idea that this means people are going to lose their jobs. I think that it's just like everything else. Those people are going to have to be repurposed and find new ways to find economic value, which, coming full circle, is why you hire that consulting firm to come in and help you do this, right?
And honestly, it's going to be a shift. So yeah, you may be losing the job that you know today. It's going to shift. And if you're a great worker, they're going to find something for you to do for that organization tomorrow.
Of course.
That makes a lot of sense. And based on what you're doing today, you may be able to help oversee what's being done by AI. So your utility is not going to go away.
Interesting headline, although I don't know this person's name. It was Microsoft's current head of AI deployment. Said this week that in a year and a half, all
white collar jobs
will be automated agentically.
Except his.
Yeah, that's right. Except it is. Right. But you know, again, coming down to like real world, I mean, Perry runs a business. You've even talked to him about the benefits of AI. And that's exactly like, I don't know if we're okay to talk about it. You want to give a snippet about what you...
Yeah, and we were working on his stocking line, and it's amazing... How AI can get it.
You probably shouldn't talk about this until it's actually available.
What's it called, Grant? It's coming out. It's
called A Leg Above.
That's right. That's right. That's even better.
But
I might as well just get on board with this because it's never going to go.
No, it's called Perry's Bunny's Paradise, and it's coming, and we're going to have, products.
No pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended. It's all in playful fun. Just like Barry likes to dress up, and we have no problem with that. You know,
AI porn's already blasé, right?
Way overplayed, right?
No, but it's predictive maintenance is what is actually the use of it. Right? Perry works in a mechanized environment, and the machine that they run is very big, requires a lot of management and maintenance. It's very expensive, so some of the predictive capabilities that AI can say,
and hey, AI can sense things that humans can't. So
exactly,
you know, whether it's through the vibrations, the heat, any mechanical failure that can have a sensor put to it, they're able to pick this up before the human eye or touch or sense. And usually it's after the fact, and now you're repairing. And especially in organizations that are running 6 to 7 days a week, that downtime costs you money.
Absolutely.
The time through the procurement market is not easily gotten today through the shipping, you know, channels. So, those are all real dollars that can be fixed real quick with AI sensored technology, and the predictive maintenance is amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where this idea of, oh, come tell me about it, have somebody who could fix this for me potentially, maybe someday. The speed for implementation in this shift, this is actually probably something we should, you know, when we talked about some of these major technology waves that have kind of washed over corporate America, you know, back in the Y2K era, there was this move toward ERP, enterprise resource planning. And all these big companies and lots of middle market companies were trying to automate stuff like accounting, like general ledger, accounts payable, human resources, hiring, sorting, you know, and manufacturing. What's our supply chain look like? Right. Where we need this part, where is it in our supplier network? Can we get it here tomorrow? Do we have to wait?
That was all manually coded, though, too. So
that's right. And those implementations, again, in those days, you would hire a consulting firm like a PeopleSoft or an Accenture or a KPMG to come in, and they would, spend a year and a half doing what's called requirements analysis, where they're charging you hundreds and thousands of dollars an hour to have a bunch of 23-year-olds sit and talk to people who've been doing their job for 20 years and say, okay,
this is a great point.
Okay. So you're telling me you take the TPS report and you actually deliver it.
It's office space.
Right. Yeah, and that's a requirement. Yeah. So they document that, and then they'd find a way for a coder to come in and write code to have that document end up on this person's desk without Mary having to pick it up here and put it down here. That process caused massive heartache. And ERP was necessary because we had to automate those processes back in Web 1.0 days, but it left a lot of scar tissue on corporate America, and it's what led a lot of, you know, I think, seen it in my career, a lot of leaders, you know, kind of hold technology advancement at arm's length, and they want the benefits of it, but they
don't want to relive those years.
Yeah, they don't want to do it first.
No,
you know, happy to be fifth, happy to learn from my three competitors doing it wrong and losing money, and then I can hire the same consultant just fired to come in and not make the same mistake. And this is the way corporate America works. So, in some senses, this move toward agentic AI adoption is nothing new. Mm. What makes it new is just the power and the speed with which that implementation process is going to happen. Instead of 18 months doing requirements before you write a line of code like it was back in 98, 2002, today you can come in, start talking to the agent in 6 months, have your whole process.
I was going to say 18 months right now is an
eon of time.
Yeah. I mean, you're already going into the next phase. So, and just like we were in the initial phase, and I just wrote an article on this morning on shifting from experimental to practical AI, agentic AI, and how enterprises are looking at it more realistically now. And that was the lesson learned. Is the quick adoption was not smart. Yeah, it was fun to play with, but there was some real risks out there by letting agents go out there and do autonomous tasks that were not properly guardrailed. So now the measures are being put in place. And once the measures are put in place, these tools are very powerful. And just as we talk about every day, like with Anthropic and mm-hmm. OpenAI and Gemini, they're all coming out with better agent, you know, systems that are working even more efficiently, more reliably, more safely. So,
and there are safeguards built into those models.
There are.
But those are societal level safeguards.
Right.
They're not to keep employee A and B from using the model in a way that would be detrimental to the company. That process is what we're talking. When we say the word governance, that's what we're talking.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
Exactly.
Right, and that's,
we're talking on the enterprise level. We're talking what's going on within those organizational walls that could affect what's going on. You have to be able to protect that. Now, we can certainly talk about how you're dealing with the platforms too, whether we're siloing that or we're taking it offline, keeping it protected. Those are all, you know, ways to do it too, depending on the regulation, you know, in the industry that's going on and how we have to protect it. But it's an interesting dynamic going on, especially with the cloud market. You know, the cloud was the place to go, but now that's why AWS has kind of changed it and said, you know what, we're going to bring the cloud to you and do it on the enterprise, you know?
Well, this would be a real tangent, so we'd probably have to table this.
We are.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to bring Michelle on to talk about the difference between cloud computing and this paradigm where we're using AI. Microprocessors are getting so small and so powerful, and we have very recently, and we're going to talk about it here in a minute, been able to start running models that have enough memory and enough processing power where you don't have to get data on the phone or get data in the car, send it over the public airwaves into a cloud for the data to be manipulated, and then have the answer sent back to you on the highway or you know, in the mall or wherever you are. These processors are now becoming fast enough, and the architectures are being engineered in such a way where you can run an entire LLM on your phone. You don't need to go to the cloud. Exactly. You don't need massive boxes of servers to do
that computing. Changes the game.
It's a complete game changer.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a good point to segue to come back to our second thing. You want to take a break and we'll come back talk about Anthropic?
We freshen up and we stoke the fire and we get into the
This might be a two ice cube night. We were talking about I've never made it to a second ice cube, but I think tonight we're going to make it there.
Yeah, usually we just go knee at the end.
Yeah, this is going to disappear while I'm doctoring that fire. We're going to come back.
It's very good.
Yeah, we're going to come back and slur our way through a conversation about Anthropic and what they're doing with DeepSeek and the Chinese competitors who are trying to steal their shit.
This is the first time I give a legal briefing with three bourbons in me.
All right, we'll be right back. Cheers. All right.
What happens when work disappears? When money dissolves? And when freedom becomes something you earn, not something you're born with, a new kind of power is rising, not a government, not a corporation, but the algorithm. In the algorithmic state, no jobs, no money, little freedom, Amazon best-selling author Bradley J. Martineau reveals the world we're stepping into, a world where your reputation is computed, your opportunities are filtered, and your identity is shaped by systems that know you better than you know yourself. This is not science fiction. This is the operating manual of the future forming around us right now. If you want to understand the forces that will define power, belonging, and freedom in the decades ahead, start here. The algorithmic state. No jobs, no money, little freedom. Available now on Amazon.
What's up, Mitches? We're back.
We're back.
As you can see, we are
refilled.
We are loaded.
Bourbon barometer. down.
Fire is crackling.
It is.
Hey, before we're going to talk a little bit about Anthropic and their news this week, but before we do that, we need to throw it to Perry for a little bit of acknowledgement. We got a really great message this week from a friend. What was that, Perry?
Yep, a longtime friend, Beth Kobach. Beth, I hope you're enjoying this week's episode. Took the time to send me a text telling me how much she enjoyed the show, enjoyed listening to it. She listened to
it. Perry shared it with us, and it was very heartfelt. Yeah, and nice. We love the fact that you're listening, Beth. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, we appreciate you, Beth.
Enjoy your ride to Pittsburgh.
Someday maybe we'll be able to put a show out every day. We'll see. But she said she wished there was one every day she could listen to. So appreciate it. I know her from back when the kids were playing hockey. And I think her son knows
Andrew. Brad's son. Of course. Yeah.
So, yeah, pretty cool. Thanks, Beth. Appreciate it. Hope you're enjoying.
Awesome. Yeah, and hey, Beth, if you're ever in town, come over for a bourbon and sit in on a show. I mean, we'd love 100%. To have you.
Yeah, that's right. We love the live studio audience. You know, Johnny's over there. He's propped up now. I mean, his third bourbon is hitting him a little harder than the rest of us.
Yes, so. Sir. Here, boys. I'm your biggest fan.
All right, so we're gonna try our best to get through this in a way that is educational and semi-factually correct.
This may be the most interesting dissection of the Anthropic news this week.
This one gets pretty technical. So we talked last week about Anthropic.
We did.
And their CEO, a guy named his name's Dario. This was the dude that we pointed out was kind of a run-of-the-mill kind of tech genius a handful of years ago, and now he's worth $7 billion based on valuation of Anthropic. We said last week Anthropic has 10x'd their growth. They've grown 1,000% 3 years in a row.
Not bad.
And a lot of that is because their LLM has been acknowledged as really good for a handful of things. They do a lot of stuff. It competes with OpenAI's ChatGPT and Gemini and all the other ones that we talk about all the time. But theirs is really particularly good at coding, right?
Extremely good at coding, but also very conservative on the safe side too, which I think is such another.
Yeah, you want to remind people about that piece before we go into the.
Well, I mean, I think that's the other thing that he's making headlines this week is fine. You know, we talked last week about how the Pentagon was kind of pushing back a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they requested a meeting with him. So this week, since we talked, so I think they're going to have a conversation about that, how they can utilize his platform so that it meets their safety standards or get some assurances that if they're going to work outside that bubble, it's not going to be used in any inappropriate manner that they would want it to be used. Or we're, again, like what we got into, we're going to get into, and I think his concerns are legitimate, it's going to get scraped. So and I think that's what his concerns are.
Yeah, so let me add a little context here for the listener. The U.S., the Department of Defense wanted access. Their LLM, Anthropic's LLM is so good that the Department of Defense wants to use it. Mm. And they have engaged Dario on, hey, let's figure out a deal where we can have access to your highest end model.
And it's not the only model they're using. They're using several. So
right. As you would, right? Yep. If you run a restaurant, you're not just buying Coke. You need to have, some Dr. Pepper.
I just want them to know it's not an all or nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So aligned with his stance to this point, where the reason he's kind of famous is because he's been the one who's been pushing back. You remember we talked about Sam Altman he runs OpenAI.
ChatGPT.
ChatGPT. He wants to push. No safeguards. You got to break some eggs to make an omelet. You know, there might be some bad outcomes, but we need to do it for the sake of,
the AI race.
Yeah, AI race, right? We got to win.
Put it whatever you want.
Dario's stance has been a little bit more held back, and he has been very vocal about warning the world of the potential dangers associated with AI.
And he's also an offspring, I guess, of OpenAI, as he was the one that developed their ChatGPT second and third versions.
So my monkey brain says to me, well, if Sam Altman has made himself famous by going as fast as possible, and this guy left Sam Altman to go start his own company, what would be the smartest thing for him to do is take the opposite stance and say the opposite of what Sam Altman's
just
doing.
Just like this week, they didn't want to hold hands on stage. they were the break. They were the break in the whole getting up there and showing unity overseas. It was very telling.
Oh, I didn't know that. All right. Yeah. Well. So Dario has pushed back on the Department of Defense, and he has said, "Yeah, we would love for you to use our model, and we'd be happy to do that, but we need to make sure that you're not going to use it to do a couple of things. And the government said,
That's exactly what we want to use it for.
What are you talking about? This is the U.S. government.
We'd like to use it for mass surveillance, and we'd like you to use it for mass destruction. So what are you saying we can't do that?
Very specific. Yeah, very specifically, he is concerned about the model's ability to surveil private citizens and, you know, invade privacy protections that all U.S. citizens are supposed to have. I think this is hilarious because none of us have any goddamn privacy because we don't own our data. And I'm not going to go off on a tangent, but there's a, you know, data and online living and consumer behavior in the form of data has been available. I mean, that's why Google's in business. It's why Microsoft's in business. And you notice that we've never had a bill that has talked about what rights you have to your own data. And there's a very goddamn good reason for that.
There is a good reason.
It's not because the companies are going to make money. It's because the government wants to say, hey, we need this and this and this and this when it's convenient for them.
The algorithmic statement.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Bradley is a groundbreaking author on this. If you've not read the algorithmic state, it will give a much more eloquent and more complete description of exactly what we're talking about. That said, need to take a step back. He doesn't want DOD to use his tool to surveil people, which it would be absolutely spectacular at. This said, here was this week's headline. A lot of media outlets kind of reported this wrong. What a lot of folks said is, you guys might remember the company called DeepSeek. DeepSeek is a Chinese AI lab. They're an AI model. They're trying to build their own model to compete with all of the models that are born here in US that we talk about all the time. And they're the one that have gotten far enough. They're a little bit handicapped because the US government has made it a matter of national defense priority that we're not going to sell aggressor countries, China, Iran, North Korea, our best technology. So they're not getting these NVIDIA chips that are necessary to do two things with these LLM models. One, train them, okay, and we're going to talk about what that means. We've talked about it before, but then two, allow them to provide what's called inference to their customers. So we've restricted sales of the NVIDIA chips to China.
We have.
And so...
And my two cents on the DeepSeek is essentially is China's version of our furniture or any other manufacturing. You know, it's going to be made very cheap and made by kids.
And so this is... Okay, so... Here's, if I were at home, I would say to myself, well, how in the world can you make an AI model cheaply?
Yeah, right.
Like what that
does. So how does that exist, right?
Right. We've been talking about for 5 weeks now, all the money that these companies are raising to ensure that they have facilities and electricity and computing power to be able to build these things, not just build them, but then refine them over time.
Right.
Okay. So Anthropic spent billions of dollars developing and what's called training their AI model, Claude.
Yeah.
The process of training is one that's important to understand because when an AI model thinks for you and you ask it a question, what essentially happens is you say stuff like, I need, and the model takes those words as I need, and it goes through a massive number of iterations of what could possibly come next. That it's calculating the percentage likelihood that you might say, I need something to eat, or I need a drink really bad, or I need to take a dump, or I need sex, or whatever it is.
Or and, I need Quad Guy's face routine.
And the model will calculate the percentage likelihood of you asking a particular question, and that's what allows it to go back to what's essentially, when you train a model, you're essentially giving the machine a memory, right? So when you're asking it a question, it's learning from what you're asking it. This process is called context. You're providing it context through what you're typing into the chat bar or the data that you're giving it in the chat bar. And then it's going to say, okay, based on all of this information that I've just perceived, I need to start doing the work before they're done, right? To find the answer and to render it as quickly, which is called inference, right? Training is creating the memory. Inference is using that memory to give you advice.
To learn from
that. Yeah, give you an answer.
And then use that to build on it, right?
Right. So Anthropic has a model that is really good at a number of things that the Chinese want to be really good at.
Well, and it's it's a compliment, I think, that the Chinese are attacking.
Of course it is. Yeah. But the Chinese can't get rights to the hardware that is necessary to train. And the reason we made the distinction between training and inference mm-hmm. is because you can't provide world-class inference if you don't have training. Until DeepSeek has figured out what we can do, and this is really remarkable. DeepSeek stood up something like, I'm going to get the number wrong, but 30,000 agents, bots, chatbots.
They did.
And they align those chatbots to what's called a proxy server.
That's right.
A proxy server is somebody that buys right to conduct internet traffic on your behalf. And if you're somebody like China, you would hire a proxy server to obscure who's accessing the model. Yeah, go.
Just in lay terms, that is...
Hey, watch the mic there, pal.
Yeah, I laid that heavy.
That was, in lay terms.
Yeah. Episode one knocked it right
off. I laid that heavy on the mic. So what I'm saying in lay terms is that they're making these bots look like humans are coming in to do the normal inquiry.
Well, how would you know? Right? How would you know?
On a normal basis, unless it was a massive basis where the numbers kind of went up so great, then it raised concerns, right?
Well. So here's what is it? Well, okay, first one. Hold on. Part one before part two, because if I don't say this, I'm gonna lose. Okay, what DeepSeek was doing is they were standing up fake people, mm-hmm. bots, aligning them through a gateway that allowed them to be obscured. It was no longer Chinese. It was just some student somewhere. Asking the Claude a question.
They masked it.
Well. And what's interesting is. They just started peppering the LLM, Claude, with thousands and thousands and thousands and millions and billions of questions that were very complex. Explain to me your reasoning and thought process, Claude, on how you would solve this problem.
Right.
And then they would ask another question. Then they would ask another question. Mm-hmm. They would say, okay, well, why did you eliminate a certain answer?
Right.
Why did you propagate this answer? And so they would ask enough questions using technology, using AI.
It's genius.
To just... hammer this thing with question after question after question after question. And what they were doing is they were essentially learning from the answers.
Yeah.
So DeepSeek
was
taking this. They were taking the questions, the logic that they were receiving back, and the answers, and then just feeding it to their model and say, okay.
Their cheaper model that's on the...
We want you to do this. And it's not as robust as... And the important thing is, if you don't have the hardware, if you don't have the NVIDIA chips to do the training, which the Chinese do not, you can't do that really heavy lifting where you're actually creating kind of a memory. Again, I use the term memory. It'd be like if you're a person, well, how do you know anything? Well, because somebody told you and you remember it. And that's what training an AI model is. They don't have the ability to do that. So what they did is just start hammering it with messages, get, you know, essentially instead of having 100% complete understanding of how Claude would come up with the answer, they would have a 85, 90% answer, which is typically good enough.
Which is usually good enough, right? And I got to give the Chinese credit here because who'd have thought they would have gotten a gold medal in the Winter Olympics of AI? Because
and that's right.
And I honestly, this is kind of the loophole, and they figured it out.
Well, hold on. Okay, so this process that we're talking about, where you just pepper a model with questions, and then based on the answers that you get back, you can essentially build your own model without having to go through the very labor intensive, very expensive process of training and building your own model.
They're reverse engineering it.
That's exactly right. They're reverse engineering it. And they now have, what's interesting, is essentially a lighter, faster model that is not encumbered by hundreds of billions of parameters in training, And they're able to use these very complicated sets of questions to understand not just how they get the answer, but how they decide that an answer is not going to work and go toward a different answer. So they're essentially training a model without having to spend the money to train a model. It's brilliant.
So as a lawyer, this is where it kicks in though, right?
So the question for you is, what recourse?
Is it legal?
Yeah, what recourse does Claude have? What recourse does Anthropic have? Can they sue the Chinese for patent right infringement?
Well, and I think they will sue them.
Okay, well, give your opinion because I have one I want to share. Yeah, go.
Well, under the Digital Millennium...
Brad's an attorney. I just want to remind you, this is his strike zone, so his opinion is more important than 100% of the
region. And I've tried to shake those feathers, so if it doesn't come across, understandably so. But the Digital Millennium Copyright Act of 1998, which was put in place...
Holy shit. Okay, keep going.
Right after the internet came on.
Yeah.
And it needed to be put in place was to protect internet companies for a couple things. So the very first thing that was put on was the notice and takedown clauses, which We're for platforms that if somebody on your platform posted something that was copyright infringing, you had the right to get noticed and then have the right to take it down.
Mm-hmm.
I have a relevant story.
Well, and Perry, I know you have many relevant stories because you have so many.
Now, relevant,
relevant to the topic, not the length. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Keep going.
But
let me ask you, did they steal anything?
Well, here's where they're arguing is right. The second part. And what they're arguing is and I need to read the language just to make sure that I'm is not a circumvention of technical controls. So,
right
on the internet,
right? They didn't steal code.
They did not steal.
They didn't hack anybody.
They didn't steal code. So what they're arguing is that they have the CAPTCHAs, where you have to make sure you're not a bot that's coming in, protections, or they have the limitations of usage, or they have any of these other parameters that are in place. They're arguing and those are a circumvention of technical controls to their copyrighted material, which still has to be a copyrighted protection under there. And here's where the lawyer in me argues, and this is where our government has failed these companies because they thought they were big and bold to come out and say, nothing that's done by AI is copyrighted. It has to be human controlled. It has to be human created.
No. Oh, I didn't, yeah.
So if it's coming out of an AI.
Well, that's going to need modified.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, not from us.
Yeah,
right. but you know who's going to be at that table going, I demand this, right?
Okay, well, you know what? Here's the analogy. So when I was listening to this, and I'm thinking to myself, so did the Chinese DeepSeek hack Anthropic and steal code? The answer is no. So I looked at it the other way. Well, okay. Well, did Anthropic, I'm thinking about what claim could they have? And I think the answer is Anthropic, you just need to be a little bit more stringent about your access control.
Well, and Anthropic's right. also been on the receiving end of that. Is that they've said, they went out and when they trained their models, they were using a lot of unauthorized access and materials.
Well, that's such a great comment. This is too good. What Bradley's talking about is a comment from Elon Musk. Elon Musk came out, I think just yesterday, and said, this is so hilarious that Dario and Anthropic right? are complaining about somebody stealing their technology in a way that's actually...
The irony is bourbon palpable.
Well, because he said they trained
right.
they trained Claude on stolen content from
all
authors
over.
and public periodicals
right.
and stuff that people own like books, magazines, published academic articles. They just stole all that stuff before there was a rule that said you can't have it. So Elon Musk came out and said, you got to be kidding me. The irony here is so thick. You're angry because they stole your stuff without stealing it when you stole everybody right. else's stuff without stealing it. So
yeah.
maybe you should.
Right. Yeah. yeah. Well, and it even gets better because, again, if there's no copyright protection, they have no leg to stand on until the governments, and they will. It's like the first wave of the internet coming on. So they think this is the bad... the bad player in the room that's trying to do bad things. It's affecting creativity. It's affecting this when, all these different levels, which I appreciate. If it really is and you're stealing other, people's original work, that's not good.
But my they're not doing that.
They're not. I would agree with you here because here what they're doing, and this is the crux of the issue, and it's much like the
because group. They're not, hold on, they're not trying to copy.
They're not.
Claude. They are trying to use... They're trying to use the rationale, the logic strings, and answers from them to reverse engineer how Claude comes up with those answers.
And this is the perfect Google analogy.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because it's the output.
Yeah.
So when you type something into Google and you search it and you get that output, and Google has its algorithm and it's software in the background that's doing all the web crawling that brings that to the forefront. There's a lawsuit that's pending right now on that very issue by another company that is taking Google's outputs for their own use. And they're saying, no, you can't do that scraping and use it for your own use.
Okay. But as far as I understand this, DeepSeek is not taking their outputs. they're understanding the logic and the thought process, implementing it with their own code, and creating outputs of their own. They're not stealing anybody's outputs. They're stealing the thought process that leads to the outputs.
But how are they stealing the thought process?
By reverse engineering.
Exactly.
Right. So they're not stealing anything.
No, but they're taking the outputs to reverse engineer that thought process. So, but here's where I get back, and here's where I think it fails. If I'm arguing this, or if I'm the judge on this, there's no copyright stance, right? At least not in America. Our laws have made it very, very clear. Our copyright office has come out and said, if it's created by AI, there's no copyright protection.
There's no copyright.
Therefore, Anthropic has zero copyright protection.
That's the way that, second time I said it, my monkey brain perceived this. And I was thinking about, you're gonna laugh at me when I tell you this. Definitely 25 years ago, 20, 25 years ago, this is so dumb. I think it was Yoplait or one of the yogurt companies ran a promotion. And I just remember this. I didn't research this. They ran a promotion where every time you'd peel open the yogurt pod on the foil top, there were airline miles. And I can't remember whether it was United or US Air or whatever. But it's like, you eat yogurt, you get, let's call it 300 airline miles. Some guy was eating his yogurt. He's like, well, I'm just going to keep eating. And he finally sat down. He said, but wait a second. If I bought, say, $10,000 worth of yogurt, I would get $800,000 worth of airline tickets. So he did that. And the airline is like, what the fuck? And they tried to find a way to get... Do you remember this?
I don't.
No, I mean, it's so obscure.
A little bit.
But that was just the bourbon going down. Yeah,
but what recourse does the airline have? You're running a promotion. All the guy did was math.
Well, and I think
all DeepSeek's doing. They're just doing math to figure out how we
get... Have you seen the documentary about Pepsi giving away a fighter jet?
Yes.
You see the whole thing?
That's a great...
That guy legitimately won.
He did.
He beat
and their promotion. And that's exactly the same case, the Pepsi jet.
That's exactly... When you started talking about that, that's exactly what...
Not familiar with that.
No, you have to look it up. It's on one of the documentaries.
They had... It had something to do with if you... It's like collecting points. And when I used Pepsi to smoke, points. Marlboro did the same thing. You would collect the Marlboro miles off the side of the pack, and then you could buy merchandise with it. Well, Pepsi ran some kind of a promotion where if you bought so much Pepsi, they would give you a fighter jet. And it was a joke. It was obviously a joke. But the guy did it.
Did it.
And then he actually sued them and forced them.
He won.
He won.
There's a documentary on Netflix.
Great example. Same thing.
Listeners can appreciate Perry's raspy smoking voice because it goes perfect in those size 13 stilettos and stockings.
Perry doesn't smoke anymore.
Yeah, I know. You're very healthy.
Yeah, of course you are.
Right. Well, I'm not healthy, but I don't smoke.
Hey, Perry, you look good. The skin's good. Yeah,
skin, the legs, everything, Mitch.
Yeah, right. I don't know whether we have reached any conclusions.
I don't think we have, but I think Dario's probably barking up the wrong tree here because and Google's not going to get... And I was researching this a little further today because I knew that this existed out there. Google hasn't gotten very far with it either, because that's the question. So if it's free to the public, it's openly accessible.
Okay. Yeah. That's not what they did. They bought... But you keep going, yeah.
Well, but what I'm saying, so now assume, okay, we'll get past that. Get past the accessibility layer. If they bought whatever
they bought access,
if they bought legally, access,
absolutely,
and now they have access to it. But then again, you got to look to the terms and conditions, right? And that may be a whole different... different fight. So
yeah, that's where I'm landing on this.
Well, if their terms,
terms and conditions, you can't ask a lot of really good questions.
Well, no.
How are they going to regulate that?
No, but the terms and conditions can say you can't use an automated system to come in.
Well, I think that's clearly where they're going, because what I understand about what Anthropic is trying to do to thwart these efforts, and they're already well in their way on this. Obviously, we're not reading about it. This has already happened. They are when you are a third party actor trying to access an enterprise model that you've paid to have access for, you have to do it through something called an API, application protocol interface. That's how one piece of software talks to another piece of software.
It's communication. Right? It's like your waiter to the kitchen.
Exactly. And what is happening is Anthropic has now started looking for certain types of API traffic, cadence of queries, a human is never going to ask a really complicated three-layered question every 30 seconds for 9 hours about the same topic. That's not human behavior. That's clearly something that's automated, right? And that's a bot in China banging the model to ask it as many questions as possible to figure out how do we get to where we're going and what's going on there. What do you say, Bear?
So you keep talking about bots. Are these the same bots that
yes.
post all these posts on social media? Yeah. A lot of them are just yes. bullshit.
That's exactly
and they're AI generated.
And Perry argues with them every day and has not won one of them.
No, I get away from that. But
no, but that's exactly when I say bot, that's exactly what I'm saying.
So are these also the things that the Trump administration has accused China of using to try yes. to sway elections?
Yes,
or,
yes. yes. You know,
explain how those work. Like, what do they, okay. they tell AI, hey, send a million bots out to go make these posts on social media to try to convince people.
Well, I'll let you tackle, but I will just say this. It's very much so like the agentic world that's out there right now, but it's the bots were on a solo mission. So when you would send the bots out before, you had one task that you threw them out and they did it. And if that task was to argue with Perry Muir online about every stiletto fashion that was out there.
Like they
what
know.
What you're saying now
like
is they now know. That they're agentic, they have the ability to learn from the response, right. craft another question,
right.
and continue to rail on this.
Like they head. Know what I know, Brad.
So now now the bots are getting smarter.
Right, right, right. And, okay, so. We do need a break. We do need a break?
Okay.
Oh, our technology is going to blow up? Okay.
No. No, well, but. Perry stilettos are getting hot.
Okay.
They just got red heels, so we're
remember where we were, and we'll come back.
Yeah, no problem. We got about five more things to say that
yeah, we probably do.
Nobody gives a shit about. Yeah, but we're going to cover it anyway. Come back and listen to those last five
after the last pour, it'll be good.
Like you said early on, nobody gives a shit anyway.
That's right. All right, we'll be back in a second to finish this up for our own entertainment.
Right.
What happens when work disappears, when money dissolves, and when freedom becomes something you earn, not something you're born with? A new kind of power is rising, not a government, not a corporation, but the algorithm. In the algorithmic state, no jobs, no money, little freedom. Amazon best-selling author Bradley J. Martineau reveals the world we're stepping into. A world where your reputation is computed, your opportunities are filtered, and your identity is shaped by systems that know you better than you know yourself. This is not science fiction. This is the operating manual of the future forming around us right now. If you want to understand the forces that will define power, belonging, and freedom in the decades ahead, start here. The algorithmic state, no jobs, no money, little freedom. Available now on Amazon.
So here's my question.
Love it.
My question is, if the Chinese are using their, what's the name? DeepSeek.
DeepSeek, yeah.
They're using DeepSeek to use our systems to their advantage. To train their systems, mm-hmm. train their model.
You got it.
Could we give them bad information intentionally to throw their model off?
Interesting question. And I love the fact that you asked that question because it means that you asked it the right way.
So he did.
It means, are we doing a good job explaining this? I don't know. I'm not going to
You're doing a very
spike
good
the
job.
Ball on the 5-yard line.
Because your if question, I understand it.
Yeah. Your question's a great one.
It's a great question. And that's where we can get into.
Yeah. Right. So the answer live? To that is, when
let's fucking start over. I'm sorry. I thought we were fucking around.
Right, no,
take two.
This is great content.
I thought he was asking.
We're rolling.
Yeah, we've been rolling.
Yeah. Oh, we are good. Okay, yeah.
So I'm sorry. I wasn't there.
I'll keep going. I'll fix that up.
So that was too informal for me.
The answer to that question is.
It's real. Just keeping it real, Brad.
All right, thank you, brother.
So when the Chinese use these fake proxy servers to these bots with the proxy servers to make these calls to Anthropic.
They look like American servers coming in.
Well, they have to come through what's called an API, right? We talked about this just a second ago. Because of the nature of the way that those prompts are delivered, the structure of those questions. No human is going to send a question every 30 seconds about a topic for 12 hours.
Other than me.
Yeah, maybe you would.
How do I put these shoes on Perry's picture?
I've literally been pounding AI like it's.
How do I make him look like the Wicked Witch of the East?
I don't know who this Chinese bot is, but God damn it, let's get him out of here.
So if Anthropic is getting a question like, explain to me your rationale and internal reasoning for how to turn. What did I say earlier? Isopropyl alcohol into a nuclear bomb.
That's perfect.
Right.
We're going to get edited on that one.
I can't even like talk about how you were able to pronounce it.
So a demented human being could ask that question.
Yeah.
And they might ask a follow-up and they might ask a third follow-up. But the way that the prompts are coming from DeepSeek, it is every 30 seconds there's a new question. Thousands and thousands and thousands of questions about a topic that is completely obscure and nobody's actually researching.
So is it like
they can detect that's not a human asking that question.
Total Chinese fucking.
So question. Are the questions?
Yeah.
Is it a question on a topic and then 30 seconds later a follow up question on the same topic, or is it like a totally random different topic?
No. It's they will ask thousands of questions about a topic, not to understand the topic, but to understand how the model gets from the initial question to the answer. It's about the logic and the reasoning, because that's what they want. They don't give a shit about what the fucking answer is. Right. They don't care. Right. They're going to generate their own answers with their own model. What they care about is having the ability to generate inference without having to spend the money to do training. Because one, they don't have the money, and two, they can't buy the equipment that's necessary to train the model.
So here's the question. So should there be copyright protections on AI inference?
No, I don't. I'm not an attorney. I don't see how that could be possible.
Well, right now as it stands, there's no copyright protections on anything AI produces.
Well, in a world where there's AGI, how do you copyright?
Well, I think that's where copyright is going to lose a little bit of its edge.
Well, it's already lost it.
Well, it has, and it's going to get rounded down, right? So it's...
How many authors have lost control of their IP in books that they sweat and slaved over, spent months writing, that people like... And this, again, back to what we said earlier. Sucked up before there was a law.
But the lawsuits have been... instilled since.
Doesn't matter. He already has the model. I mean, they might have to make some recompense, and I understand there's been some settlements already.
It's a bold take.
There's been a settlement already.
You take it, and then you pay it later, right? So,
who cares? It's an afterthought for them.
At a $3,000...
Dario could pay that himself out of...
He can now.
That's seven, you're right.
But when he wasn't doing the kind of multiples he's doing today 3 years ago, that's a different...
I guess the question is, can we use this as a weapon against the Chinese to win the proverbial
we're not that
AI
smart.
Race?
Well, no. Well, when you talk about...
we're always on the defense. Well, listen. Hence the hockey guy.
That's true.
The process of say the question again.
I said, could we use... If we know they're... abusing our technology that way.
Yeah.
Could we use that as a weapon against them?
We know now.
Well, other than making the model dumb, here's what they're doing to protect against this. And this is actually, it's happening. When they receive all those prompts and they detect that this is not a human asking a question that a human needs, what they do is they start varying the cadence and the response structure that they give back in hopes of just confusing the other model.
Right.
But eventually... that other model will be able to detect that model A is trying to confuse model B, and then it's going to be a tug of war.
So, like, are these agents saying to each other, "Watch this"?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
I'm giving exactly a phony answer.
That's exactly right.
No, I would like to think that's how it works.
Johnny had a question. What was the question that you asked, Johnny? That was a good one.
Which one?
The one that you said. It was about.
Can you set two AI entities against each other and ping pong back and forth? Is that exactly
what this is. And I think the problem with that is if Anthropic wants their flagship model to be used by somebody like the Department of Defense. They can't have it given bunk answers because they're afraid it's China.
Referring to my question, where is you were saying that they didn't want the DOD to have this technology. I'm like, do they have a choice?
Well,
because sooner or later, let's be honest.
Yeah, they do very much want to have DOD as a customer. But again, this comes back to Dario's kind of personal affect in this whole thing. He loves this idea where he's the only guy who's saying, no, slow down while he's selling his shit to the Department of Defense. Yeah. Well, I mean, give me a fucking break.
Well, listen,
you know, if they said to him, Deacon, hey, Dario, would you want to do an enterprise contract to the Chinese government? If he could find a way to do that, he'd sell it immediately.
He probably would. But
of course he would.
But I will say this. His safety shtick is perfect timing. Because that's what's burnt every of the enterprises.
And it is shtick. You got it right. That's exactly the right word.
Exactly what
it is. It's shtick. It's bullshit.
When you talk about shtick, I was convinced years ago. Do you remember?
Don't talk about that night.
Norton, not that one.
Okay.
A different one. A different night. Norton Utilities. I was convinced that what was the guy's name?
But the utilities.
He kind of went nuts, didn't he? Peter Norton? Was that his name? Did he go crazy? He lives in the Virgin Islands or something now. Norton Utilities? Yeah, yeah. I think it was Norton.
The gentleman that founded Norton Antivirus.
Yeah.
You're talking, he's passed away.
Did he?
Yeah.
Did he die?
Why?
So anyway, I was convinced years ago in the early days of the internet, mm-hmm. when it became super easy to spread a virus or a worm or whatever you want to call it, that they were spreading the worms.
That was McAfee.
McAfee. You're right. Not Pat McAfee. The other McAfee guy.
Sorry, Pat.
But good for him for paying that tab for the hockey guys the other night.
Right.
No, he did.
Anyway,
didn't he?
I was convinced
that way, Pat.
In the early days of the internet, when it became really easy to spread a virus or a worm and infect all these computers, that they were putting the worms out there and then saying, "Oh, hey, we have the solution to save your computer from this worm. If you pay us $19.99 a month, we'll protect you."
Right.
They made billions doing it.
Well, you don't think a lot of these early software guys, I mean, there's been rumors about others, right? I'm not going to name them, but they're big names, right? That came up with the solutions, how to protect you. So
100%.
Well, that's actually, because that's where this ends.
That does where it ends. And Anthropic actually has the cure.
Well, what we're seeing here even though this is bad and Anthropic is being cheated, whether it's illegal or not, what this is resulting in is a higher order attitude toward cybersecurity that is more appropriate for the AI and agentic age.
But didn't Anthropic also announce this week that they had the patch that allows it to go out there and look at a platform and detect any cybersecurity gaps?
I don't know the answer to that.
And fix it. Well, and that's what sent the stock market into a whole tangent.
Is that right?
All the stocks this week.
When Monday dumped?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're related.
The comeback was okay.
But the initial pullback was the cybersecurity firms that were afraid that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. You know why I didn't realize that? Because I was drinking and playing.
You were drinking
golf
and golfing.
Playing Palmetto Dunes, motherfucker.
You were buried sand down.
Yeah, right. I was in the hot tub with Ricky Miller. Yeah,
you were in the
talking
hot
about
tub
chemtrails
with
and shit.
Looking up at the clouds.
Yeah, right. But yeah, I mean, yes, that is the answer.
No,
but these sorts of problems. Remember when you used to have, you'd open an email and you'd get a virus and you'd have pop-ups would happen. Then you'd have pop-up blockers. Yeah. And then, you know, you would have a digital wallet, so none of your financial information.
Right, and these guys were happy to sell you a solution for that.
Well,
right.
but that's how progress happens. You get a bad guy who's trying to figure out how to steal from you, right? You have a good guy who says, okay, we need to stop this. He's going to fuck everybody up. And then we develop a new cyber.
My question is, is the good guy the bad guy or the bad guy the good guy?
It's like
Could have been the same people.
Like a double dildo.
I don't know.
Well, listen. This plays into the topic that we've been talking about.
We're both getting fucked. That's right. What it boils down to.
No. Hold on. We've been talking about this for a couple of weeks. We've been dancing around this. We've been talking about it's what does it mean to win the AI war? We talk about it. We have to win. We talked about it a couple of times.
So what do we win?
What does that mean?
Yeah. Well,
that's what we're talking about now.
And who is determining those parameters?
Okay. Well,
that's this a whole other show, right?
This is where I get completely freaked out because, again.
Yep.
The people who are in charge of making regulation in our country have no means 100% to understand what the fuck
they have no idea about. What they're
so
doing.
Deacon,
you
know, so Deacon,
do you think AOC knows the difference between inference and training?
Well,
or
she can make it.
They were though. Republican. They know less about it.
Maybe she can mix a drink. Right. That's all we know. Yeah.
So who's influencing it? It's the influencing lobbyists that have the dollars that are saying this is what you need to just say and do.
Well, so here's a question I have as a lay person to all these topics. So I get the impression that you guys have
and Perry, you're not a lay person. You are an expert stiletto wearing drag bunny.
How do I know this is going there?
Yeah. Dancing prodigy.
So do we have a more positive opinion of Dario than we do Sam Altman? Or like, where do you guys fall?
Personally, I do.
Where do you guys fall on that
spectrum? Personally, I do.
Okay.
Because I think Sam's taking the shortcut going through the through the cheat sheet with the...
No, my opinion is one's no better than the other.
Yeah.
I said it earlier.
Probably, but
Dario worked for Sam.
Yeah.
He wanted to leave and do his own thing.
So they're equal evil.
The opposite of what Sam's doing. And that's...
I disagree. I disagree wholeheartedly.
Yeah, well,
this and I'll tell you why.
Yeah,
could you do that again, Brad? Do that wholeheartedly.
Wholeheartedly.
It was very cinematic.
I'll tell you why. We are getting loose here on Better With Bourbon.
Yeah, the bottle is empty, by the way.
The bottle is. Yeah, the bourbon barometer is empty.
Yeah.
There is no second segment after this, so we're going to wrap it up. But I will say this: I think Dario is taking the higher ground stance. He's saying that
that's the card he's playing.
Yeah, it is a card, and he stood by. It's not a temporary card. I want to take the safe model. He's even pushing the government back, which is the easy model. So when the government's giving you a contract, let's just take it and go. He's pushing back.
Well, hey man, I mean, if you rolled out a model that was specifically designed to help with coding, like Claude, you could sell it to the government, or you could sell it to 800,000 corporate enterprises who say, oh my God, this is so important. And the fact that you take the security aspect so seriously, I don't know the first fucking thing about this and I'm scared to death of it. And if we fuck it up, I'm going to get fired because I'm the CEO. Yeah, I'm going to invest with you instead of this kid over here, Altman, who is clearly deranged and wants to drive the car 120 miles an hour on the road with his eyes closed and the lights off.
But here's the thing.
He's talking his book. There's no...
Who's qualified for security of all this?
Here's the thing. So this draws a parallel to our conversation on curling last week. Mm-hmm. It's self-moderated. They call their own fouls.
I would love to.
They decide when a foul has occurred, mm-hmm. and they... I think he said adjudicate those fouls. Nope. That's the term.
Very
he
similar
used.
Pair.
So this is the same thing because
that's a great
the people,
analogy.
The people,
that's a
great
analogy. These a level of intellectual capacity.
I mean, Jordan's sitting there going, yeah.
These
yeah,
people right. who are building. Yeah.
Jordan agrees you, Jordan. With what you just said. That's
we
right.
miss you, Jordan. We need you back. But these people who are making these decisions know far more, as we've talked repeatedly, than the people in our government who are going to be controlling and trying to litigate and
moderate. We have an AI czar. His name's David Sachs. It's not a cabinet position. It's a czar position, so it can go away.
Mm-hmm.
It's
going to be a cabinet position. It has to be.
I hope so.
It absolutely needs. And not only do we need an AI czar, the problem is that the current administration has lumped these in with crypto and AI like they're the same thing. They're not.
They're just not.
There's two technologies that nobody in Washington fucking understands or has the capacity to do anything with.
And on that note, that's the problem because a lot of these politicians don't understand it, right? So how do we lobby it in an effective and responsible way if they don't? And if it's the big lobbyists with their money coming in to influence this,
it's a good question.
Is it being done responsibly?
So are Dario and Sam Altman kind of doing the trust me, it'll be okay.
Right.
Well, that's the scary thing.
Well, they were doing this. If you put your hand up, Deke, they weren't touching hands at the summit this week.
Is that right?
That's right.
No shit.
It was the divide in the unity chain that was coming through. And
yeah, so these guys, this is Coke and Pepsi. This is Ford. and Chevy.
It is.
This is the Lakers and the Celtics.
Right.
They might stand there and take a picture,
but they're not
Sports Illustrated.
But when it came to holding hands,
they are not friends. That's right.
that's where we draw the line. I don't care how many bourbons you give us.
That's right. Okay. Well, hey. I don't know how you feel about it.
I feel pretty good right now.
Why? Yeah, hey. Hey, thanks, Mitchell. We'll see you next week. That's cheers.
Nice. Cheers.
Yeah. Night.
This has been the Better with Bourbon podcast with Brad Martineau and Deacon Palmer. New episodes drop weekly. Be sure to subscribe or follow us.
The views and opinions shared on the Better with Bourbon podcast are our own and those of our guests. Nothing we discuss should be taken as financial, legal, business, or gambling advice. Don't make investment, business, or betting decisions based on our conversations, as you should always talk to a qualified professional. Always drink responsibly, never drink and drive, and only consume alcohol if you are of legal drinking age.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.